This morning, we have with us Sean Bosch, who is one of the staff members at Creative Kids. He believes in enabling people in the best sense of the word, connecting people to mentors, community resources, and others with similar interests. He has taught workshops on filmmaking, photography, and enjoys seeing what people create. I'm waiting to hear more.
Hello, everybody. As mentioned, my name is Sean Bosch, and I run a program. I'm one of three people running a program called Creative Kids. The program is basically a... it sort of started about 5 years ago, and it is a... it came from the idea that every child should have a chance to participate in things that might make life good for them. So in this particular stream of thought, it was things that were cultural and artistic, music, dance, and those types of things. And there was seen to be like a real lack for those without the finances to make that happen. And so about 5 years ago, if you're familiar with Kidsport at all, which does the same thing for sporting activities, we created Creative Kids to allow the same types of opportunities for those involved in art and culture, or who wanted to be involved in art and culture. So it's really about creating opportunity for children that might not otherwise have it, because there's sort of a belief that there are a lot of tangible benefits that come from those types of opportunities, whether it's making friends, whether it's self-esteem, learning new skills, and that sense of sort of belonging, or maybe it's better relationships with like within their family. All of those things tend to happen when kids are involved in just life-affirming activities. So about 5 years ago is when the program launched, and we fund just about any type of creative activity. The ones that are really popular are things like dance classes and art classes and drama, lots of kids learning guitar and piano, those types of things. But really anything. It could be learning a family language. It could be like stuff that's related to sort of a family's history or heritage, like built heritage, for instance, like architecture. It could be things that like somebody wants to eventually be like a fashion designer or whatever. The sky's the limit. And so we would help like things like even like sewing or something that's not necessarily, it tends to be lots and lots of dance and lots of music, just because those are the ones that tend to be in sort of everybody's sort of neighborhood, really. Like if you, it's a province-wide program. And if you grow up in, say, Grenfell, there's a dance studio there. There's somebody who teaches music there. So it's all about making sure that people in that neighborhood can access the same type of activities as everybody else. So, and as far as the specifics of the program, we'll support up to $750 per child per year. So it's pretty, it makes a pretty big dent in that gap between the funding available and what, the family can afford. It's an application process. If you know anybody who would be maybe a likely candidate for this, applications are available on our website, which is creativekidssask.ca. And we help a ton of kids in Regina, for instance. And it is an application process. So unfortunately, we aren't able to help everybody who applies. We have volunteer committees who sort of make those decisions. We have, just as put some context around it, we have committees in a number of communities across the province. Regina, Saskatoon, Battlefords are kind of our bigger ones, but also Shaunavon, Big River. There's a big one out of Prince Albert that does sort of a regional approach. And what our committees do is they're sort of responsible for letting people in the community know about the program and also to sort of assess the applications when they come in and sort of, because they know their community better than, say, I do. And so we have local volunteers sort of making the funding decisions in their communities. So that's where they are. If a family doesn't have a local committee, they can apply straight to the Regina office, who looks after all the communities that don't have a local committee, sort of. like I said, we started 5 years ago, and we have helped at least one kid in 150 communities across the province. So it's got a nice reach to it. A lot of them are returning applicants, which is nice. It's nice to see that somebody who, say, started dance when they were six is still with that instructor, say, 3 years later or something like that. That's really what we were hoping would happen with the program. That because you can tell that it's providing real value in that family's, in the life of that family. This is, I'm going to share one sort of like letter that we, occasionally we get letters from families, and this one kind of sums up everything we were hoping the program would be, so I'm just going to read it verbatim here. Thank you so much for what you've done for my children. Neither have played an instrument, and now with guitar lessons and drum lessons, they play away. These lessons have built up their self-esteem, and they can now play and sing in front of crowds with confidence. They have both joined a youth church worship group and play Saturday nights and Sundays. These lessons, thanks to Creative Kids, have done so much more for my young adults than just teaching them to play instruments. They are happier, more outgoing, and have faith in themselves. Creative Kids helps shape and mold kids to be young, happy, healthy, confident adults. So my thank you will never be enough to show how much we appreciate Creative Kids. This is really, it took us a while, because like some kids like try things out, and then, you know, they'll try dance, and then they'll try art, and they'll try, and that's completely fine. There's no penalty for doing that. That's encouraged. But to see somebody who, this is from a family, her kids have been with us for 4 years, I guess, 3 or 4 years. So to see them, like I said, returning, and just like how much it's sort of like helping them out, is really, it really speaks to what we thought was going to happen 5 years ago. And now we're starting to see we knew there were results before, but stuff like this really hits it on the head. So it's been kind of a fantastic journey. We're a charitable program. We are a program of SAS Culture, so we're funded, which is a nonprofit funded through the lottery system. So it's a very sort of complicated model, but basically any scratch and win tickets, Lotto 649 and all that stuff, a tiny little bit of that trickles down into the money that we give out to the families for this type of activity, which is great. And then we also do a bunch of fundraising through corporate sponsors, which has been relatively successful. Donations. This is a barbecue in Big River, Saskatchewan, where they had sort of a fundraising barbecue. So our volunteers do a lot of the fundraising kind of things. And that's sort of how we get the money that we give back out into the community. And this is just sort of a recap of, shows a bit of history. In 2010, we helped 40 kids. That was our first year. We had just got things rolling. We gave out sort of a handful of grants back in the fall of 2010. And now, this past year, we have helped about 1,300 across the province. So it's been like an exponential growth on there. And it's been pretty well received across the province. So you'll notice there's like a pretty sharp like zoop. And honestly, to taper things off a little bit, I haven't been telling tons and tons of people about it, because we've really set a priority of helping those who have been with us already, because it's sort of tragic to say, you know, to like an 8-year-old, like, oh yeah, you can dance for 2 years, but then like to not be able to fund them in the third year, for instance, is really a not what we're trying to do. So as much as possible, we try to fund the same kids while allowing more people to apply to the program. So it's a bit of a balance, but this number should be increasing as well. We've kind of tapered it off just in that we've communicated less about the program, I guess. And then sort of the funds that are granted. Again, 2010, we started out, I think we gave out maybe $25,000 that first year. And last year, $640,000 is where we're at, with requests of $800,000, basically. So it's been like a steady increase. The community's been really good. The corporate sponsors have been really good. We have these really neat things. Like there's in Moose Jaw, there's a dance studio, and one of the dance studio's students 3 years ago wanted to organize something that would help kids that weren't able to dance. And So she decided on holding a dance-a-thon. And she got the whole studio got involved, and we helped from, like, we have a fundraising coordinator who helped out. And normally we've had that kind of thing happen a few times, and it's usually a couple hundred dollars here, $1,000 there. Those kids raised $13,000 in a weekend. And they've done it 3 years. The sister, the girl who sort of started it 3 years ago, her sister did it this year. So it's like, it's been a really positive thing for that particular dance studio. And honestly, that has helped us fund about half of the kids that are asking for help in Moose Jaw. So it's been like just some really positive stuff that's come out of it as well. And if you add up all these blue lines, this year in December, we gave out our 2 millionth dollar, which is kind of cool. Now back to, another nod to SAS culture. One of the things they do, because we are a program of SAS culture, they do provide some money that we're able to grant out, but they also cover like the administration costs so that we're not constantly worrying about like, are we going to have money for like to turn on the power and, keep the fax machine running? That kind of stuff is all taken care of, which is really nice in that it allows us to concentrate on actually helping the kids and making sure that we've got these sponsorships and things like that. In Regina, this past year, 243 children, that's how many we were able to help this past year. And we have the kids, so the kids, basically a family, when they're looking for something, like we don't offer any of the lessons ourselves. We, essentially they will find a service provider in their area. It might be like, say, the Globe Theater, if they're interested in drama, maybe it's a summer camp, something like that. And, they just let us know in the application when the dates are, how much it costs, that kind of thing. And then so the family kind of chooses the activity and the instructor, and we essentially just facilitate it through payment directly to the service provider sort of thing. But because of that, we have worked with tons of, like, about 30 private music instructors in Regina, the Long and McQuaid's Custom Music Lessons, those types of groups, the Globe Theater. We've worked with the Cathedral Art School. We've worked with Four Cats Art Studio in the South and some other private instructors, the Mackenzie Art Gallery, tons of dance schools, Fata Dance, Dance Plus, Martin School of Dance, Youth Ballet. So we've got pretty good relationships with like a lot of these service providers, and it's been really good to see the community come on board. And sometimes there's sort of a perception where a little bit of if a family doesn't have a lot of disposable income that they won't make a commitment, or if they get it sort of lessons for, if we cover the cost of the lessons that commitment won't necessarily be there, if you know what I mean, versus if it was something they're paying for themselves. And we found that that's not, it happens occasionally, but generally just the families are super appreciative for this opportunity for the kids. And the kids turn out to be some of the best students there too. So just really great to see kind of what's happening right in Regina. And this is just another kind of, this is 2015, so last year we gave out about $115,000 to those groups in Regina. So we're hitting about three-quarters of what we're asked for right here. That's kind of really about all that I was going to say, just kind of like a brief sort of overview of what the program is. Now, this is the part I'm not quite sure about. Now, after the speaker sort of says the presentation, there's a chance for questions from the congregation. That's true. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I can go into detail on just about any part of it, but I wanted to keep it brief. It's a pretty easy program to understand. There's not a lot of complications. We try to make the application process really easy for everybody, and we try to get the results out before the activities begin, that kind of stuff.
It generally is our tradition that questions follow a presentation, and I'm glad that you have anticipated that. And quite frankly, looking around the room, I see that there's much many questions liable to be.
Perfect, perfect.
Hi, I really like what you're doing. I didn't know very much about it, so this is great. I was just wondering about First Nations people. Are they sort of, and the children from the First Nations community, mm-hmm. I know they probably participate in some of this, but how about the First Nations organizations like Sakewak, is that how you say it?
Sakewak, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking, if I went to a, what do you call it, can't think of it, powwow dancing class last fall. And the teacher was fantastic. Melissa, I've forgotten her last name, it starts with O, but I don't know how many First Nations or Métis instructors you have. I'm just curious about the Aboriginal participation.
Yeah, for sure. Great question. There's a couple of elements to that. One is that the application is open to everybody. We don't ask anybody to sort of like self-declare on the application forms to get a sense of who we're helping, just because it can sometimes be seen as, if I check this box then and I didn't get funded, is that why, or like those types of things. So we wanted to avoid that entirely. We do have a group of they're called Dream Brokers. There's a group of people that are in the schools, some in Regina, some in various communities, but what their job is to do is they sort of reside in a school or two, and they make connections to activities for the students that are in that school, make sure there's after school things happening. So a lot of the schools that they're in are community schools or those types of schools, and I know we do get a lot of Aboriginal applicants through the Dream Brokers program. And then sort of provincially, there's a couple of things too. One of the Sakewak doesn't have, it's more of an, they do have some stuff. We haven't worked with them specifically. And one of the other, like from a provincial perspective, one of the other challenges is we know that there's, that the program would be a great fit on a lot of First Nations. The challenge there is where this program really shines is where there is an existing program that costs money, and that is the barrier for participation. And on a lot of the First Nations, there isn't sort of a formal dance studio or an instructor who's charging for like a lot of that stuff sort of happens sort of naturally. So we've had a bit of a struggle with that, and we know that there's definitely more need in the province that we haven't quite reached. One thing that we did do is Cameco had a neat idea for a sponsorship, in that for the exact same reasons, we aren't able to reach a lot of the people in the northern part of the community, like LaRange and like the far north. And again, the same thing, the infrastructure for the type of we don't sort of pay money for programming. We're just there to help people for existing programming. So in the north, it's the exact same thing, in that a lot of that programming isn't necessarily happening. So Cameco provide us with a sponsorship that would allow, it opened up a programming grant for anybody in the north. And it just started in the summer. Yeah, in the summer. But basically, a community, like a school or a First Nation band or what have you, could apply to this particular section of funding for up to $7,000 to get some like programming happening in their community that would be available to everybody. It wouldn't be an individual application where you have to sort of like show that you have a need. It's just like a straight up, like anybody in the community is invited and can participate. We don't have a lot of information from it yet, mostly because a lot of the activities with the forest fires that were up there had a late start, so we haven't quite evaluated it, but we got, the first time around, we got 21 applications from communities interested in it, and we were able to fund 6, I think. So in the far north, there's some of that kind of stuff happening a little bit, and then as far as sort of working with the First Nations bands or, say, art collectives, those types of things, it's a little bit of figuring out how we can do that, the best approach to that, because we are pretty new. That was the first thing, was we wanted to make sure we got our first steps down right, and then we can kind of look at expansion a little bit. And I had one other point. We have had somebody come in and take lessons for regalia making out in Punishai. We had somebody, a couple of girls, make the powwow dancing dresses, actually, under sort of the mentorship of somebody who, well, like an elder in the community kind of thing, which was really, really quite cool. Yeah.
Good. I want to make a comment, and then I have two questions. The comment is, I love the name of your organization. If a kid said, oh, I'm sponsored by Creative Kids, it sounds like they're pretty hot there. You know, it sounds like a very positive reference. So I think, you know, I really like the way that sounds. I wanted to ask first, what proportion of the applicants actually get money? Like, what's the ratio of people applying to people actually granted money?
Yeah, it depends on the year. Depends on kind of how much funding we have. Like Saskatoon, for instance, had a couple of really successful fundraisers. So they actually outpaced everybody. Like in Saskatoon, they're able to fund more kids than even our provincial committee, just because they had some really fantastic fundraisers. It tends to be like, so the program is set up to help anybody whose income is $40,000 or less. Generally, it slides a little bit depending on the number of kids in a family, for instance. But there have been, like, about a year ago, this is where the volunteer committees come in. They kind of sit down with the applications, and we try to keep it fairly consistent. There's 6 or 7 deadlines throughout the year that people can apply. And in January, we sort of have a fresh pot of money. But we want to make sure that it's consistent. So if you apply in January, you have sort of the same, that the people making those decisions have the same approach as if you're applying at the end of the year, not to sort of distribute the money in January and then not have any for the dance stuff that people apply for at the end of the year. Percentage-wise, I think that graph that I showed is about right for the whole province. It's I think we're about 70% that we're able to fund. Most of that is because we don't have billboards out and big TV ads, and like, a lot of people don't know about it. Like, it comes through referrals from a teacher or a social worker, that kind of a thing.
I was wondering how many people got turned down. So you're saying about 30%.
Yeah.
And then about 70% actually they're successful.
Yeah. So like in Regina, I think it was probably close to 50 kids, I would say, this past year. Mm-hmm. It's, provincially it'd be about 300. I mean, we've really kind of tightened. Like, early on, people would apply for things that we didn't cover, for instance. That no longer happens. Like, people aren't applying for sports, for instance. So that would be some of the people who didn't get funded. And people with really large incomes will sometimes apply as well. So they don't, it's sort of like an eligibility kind of refusal. But now everybody who applies, they're all people that we would love to help if we could. Mm-hmm. Like, they're all kind of a great fit for the program. And it's tight. Like, I remember a couple of years ago, we had meetings with the committees where the funding was such that, you know, even into, not to get into too much of the details, but just to show how tight it is, like, we would have a conversation where we were able to help a family that was earning, say, $31,000, but the next family that was earning $32,000 in a very similar family situation was like, no. So that's, the volunteers had some really, really tough kind of decisions to make at certain points. And as more people find out about it, it's just like, there's definitely like a balance in there for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, you answered my next question, which was, what was the cutoff line? But if a person or a family is applying and they have children that would continue the next year, mm-hmm. If their income goes above your cutoff at 40, thousand. What happens?
Yeah, it's happened a couple times. I mean, some people apply because, say, somebody in the family was laid off or on mat leave or going back to school. So we know it's sort of a temporary, they might need our help for a couple years, and then we probably won't see them again, and that's fine. A lot of the families will apply repeatedly because their situation won't change. If it does change, it is based on that year. Finances, yeah. And we've had a couple of, there's definitely been a few families where we've sort of made that phone call, and it's been kind of a sad conversation. They understand it. They're really appreciative for, say, the help we were able to give them in the first couple of years, and then they understand generally, yeah. But that is how it plays out sometimes, yep. Unfortunately.
Being a private music teacher, I'm wondering how individual private music teachers can get on board with the program. And I would imagine it's on the website, so I'm wondering what other things are on your website.
Sure, yeah, it is. It's kind of funny, like sometimes a family, the thought, what we anticipated is that families would phone up, they would see like a pamphlet or a business card or somebody's website, or they would see, I want to learn piano and I live here, who's in my neighborhood, and they would sort of find out who was interested in like, they kind of need to have a conversation with that, the piano teacher, for instance, to get an idea of if they're taking new students, what the rates are, like that kind of stuff. So we thought everybody would go through that process before they applied. But there's actually a surprising number where we send notification to the instructor later on and say, hey, this child has been approved for lessons for this amount of money. And they're like, okay, who is this? Or what's Creative Kids? Or like those types of things. So it's kind of, that happens sometimes too. In the first time they hear about us, we have sent them a check saying, hey, welcome to Creative Kids, sort of thing. And then we have a conversation about what that means and how to make it work. Yeah, so there's sort of a registration process a little bit, and that is online. It used to be quite simple. We've added one extra layer to it in that now we're asking for criminal record checks from the instructors, that kind of thing. Just as part of turning five and being a little more mature, we've got to look after that a little bit more, so it's slightly more complicated. But yeah, anybody who's interested in teaching can apply to us, and we'll like register with us. And then there's like a sort of a directory on our website. And the other stuff that's on the website is mostly, so families can go there and click like which region they're in and see kind of who's registered with us. It doesn't mean they have to go through somebody who's registered with us. They can apply with anybody, and we'll make that connection with the instructor once we know that they're interested in using that instructor. The other stuff on the website is mostly just kind of history about sort of who we are, how to apply, that type of stuff, really. It's our Facebook page that's more fun. That's where we, like, throw shouts out to the dance-a-thons and the volunteers and like that. That's a little more dynamic. The website tends to be just, like, the basic information kind of thing. Yeah.
My question is about, compared to kids sport, is it funded to a similar extent, and are you guys somehow related to each other? And coming from that, I guess, how did it get started? Was there a little group of people that decided that this was a good idea, and the process you guys went through for that?
For sure. It's actually modeled after kids sport. So Sask Culture and Sask Sport work together quite a bit. They are the lottery system sort of encapsulates Sask Sport, Sask Culture, and Saskatchewan Parks and Recreation, and we're each tasked with reinvesting the lottery money back into the community. So we look after culture, sport looks after sport, etc. So Sask Sport actually runs a charity called Give Kids a Chance, and that is the charity that runs Kids Sport in Saskatchewan. Now, Kids Sport has about a 20-year head start on us. So they have 48 committees now, and they grant out about $2 million a year, something like that. And so we, Dr. David Miller, he's a chiropractor in town, really great guy. Some of you may know him. He knows everybody, apparently. And he had worked within the lottery system for a while on various sort of volunteer roles, and he had for a while seen that there was a gap in the cultural side and the artistic side of the programming. So he came to, he already knew the people at SAS Culture, and he came to us and said, could we do something about it? And that launched a series of sort of like feasibility, like sort of brought the community together and talked to the arts board and, you know, SAS Sport and everybody, and just got their thoughts on who might lead something like this. And then we did a bit of a feasibility study to see, is this even practical? And all of that happened prior to 2010. And so it was probably 2 or 3 years of conversations and figuring out what to do. And instead, since it was sort of like a pilot project, like that September 2010 where we helped about 40 kids, it was decided that the best way to proceed was to give kids a chance, extend their charitable status to this program, because SAS Culture itself is not a charity, it's a nonprofit, so it can't do the charitable side of things. So basically SAS Sport gave kids a chance permission to extend that to us. So all of our financial stuff is done through Give Kids a Chance, basically. So yeah, there's not like a close partnership between Kids Sport and Creative Kids, but behind the scenes there's a lot that's very similar, and a lot of partnerships that are making all of this happen, for sure. Yeah, did I answer all of that? So yeah,
thank you. I have two questions. The first one is, because I don't know if I heard it, do you have an age limit with regard to Creative Kids? Are they going from 0 to 20? And the second one is, have you ever decided, no, do you know what? What you're trying to do is not allowable? Should you prevent kids from doing whatever they would like to do? Or is there anything that would automatically you will say, no, we won't promote this particular type of program?
Yeah. Sorry, there was some buzzing. The first one was about the...
The first one, yeah, the age.
The age of the kids?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it will help anybody 4 to 19 at the time of the application deadline. Yeah, so 4 to 19. And, yeah, we definitely set up some guidelines as to what's eligible, what's not eligible. There have been some that, like anything that's a sport, we're like, Kids Sport already does this. There have been some gray lines where there's been like yoga and Zumba, gymnastics, cheerleading, like those types of things. And we sort of decided that it was more based on fitness than say like theater, which is more performance. So we kind of have a bit of a line there as to which activities are eligible. And that's generally it. It's usually something that's like Zumba or something that's like got some elements of performance, but it's mostly fitness. We've also had applications from like somebody that wants to be involved in Cubs and Scouts or 4-H, and we've said we can't help those out. The other thing that is more, that might be included generally in the concept of it, but actually isn't, is things like band trips. Like, we aren't able to cover transportation, and so something like a band trip, first of all, if we felt we couldn't handle the number of applications we'd probably get, because if we said yes to one school, there are how many schools across the province that would sign it, that would try to use the funding for that, and that's where all of our money would go immediately, right? So there's been like those types of decisions for sure. Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for a very interesting presentation.
For sure.
And I think we could be here quite a while.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that I'm sure there's more questions, and if you've got a moment, I'm sure there'll be a conversation over the coffee hour.
Sounds great. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very, very much.